Beruchim Abayim Rabotai, welcome to another edition of our Thursday night class. We are starting the new Sefer Shemot. We're in Parashat Shemot.
Just in the beginning, but...
Of course, our parasha talks about the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu in Egypt. And the Torah mentions to us a few episodes that took place when Moshe Rabbeinu became a gadol. I'd like to discuss one of the three that the Torah mentions. The Torah mentions that he saw an Egyptian beating up a Jew, and he intervened and he killed the Egyptian. The next story is that he saw two Jews that were fighting. Seems nothing changes. And then he told the fellow that raised his hand, he said, Rasha, lama tekere aicha. Those happened to be Datan v'Aviram. But what I want to talk about is the event that took place as a result of the second episode. There's a third episode. Datan v'Aviram, they tell Moshe Rabbeinu, who died and left you in charge? Are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? He realized that they were onto him. Although before he killed the Egyptian, he made sure the coast was clear, but obviously they saw it, and they went to be moser on him to the government. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to become a fugitive. He had to run away from Egypt, and he ran away to Midian. That's where we pick up tonight's derash, when he's in Midian. So the pasuk writes, "Vayivrach Moshe mepenei Paro, vayeshev be'eres Midian." Vayeshev ala be'er, he goes to the well. Ul kohen Midian sheva banot. The kohen of Midian doesn't tell us his name yet, but he had seven daughters. Vatavona, vatidlena, vatemalena et harhatim lashkot son avihem. They were doing the shepherding for their father, and they went to fill up the trough with water in order to give it to the sheep. The sheep comes and tells us that at this point already the Kohen Midian was the former Kohen Midian. He had retired. He realized that what he was doing was Avodah Zarah, and he then was excommunicated by the community. I mean, you can imagine, he have the archdiocese of Midian, and one day he gets up and he says, you know, he doesn't believe in anything that that has been preaching all these years, and that there's a God. So you can imagine that many of the, you know, the followers would not be too happy. Well, they excommunicated him, so he couldn't even find people to work for him. That's why his daughters were doing the shepherding. So the shepherds come and they chase them away. They chase the girls away. At least that's what it sounds like. But Yaakov Moshe Vayoshi'an, Moshe happened to be in the right place at the wrong time, and he saves them. Vayashkut Sonam, and then he gives them their sheep to drink. But let's just finish the story. Vatavona el Re'u'el Avihem. They come home to their father, Re'u'el. Now here the Torah decides to tell us the name of the fellow is Re'u'el. We know him as Yitro. He had seven names. Some say that every time he had another daughter, he changed his name. But whatever it is, the Torah decides to tell us here that his name is Re'u'el. And the question is, why would it use that name here? I mean, you could use any of the seven. Here it decides to call him Re'u'el. Bayomer, he tells his daughters, Madua mihartem bohayom. Why did you come home so quickly today? It seems that they would usually be come home later. We were saved by an Egyptian national. Vegam dalo dala lanu, dalo dala, he drew for us, vayashket ason. Bayomer el benotav, so he tells his daughters, Ayo, where is he? Lama ze azavtem et ha'ish, why did you leave the ish? Kere'en lo ve'yochal lachem. Why don't you call him and give him something to eat? Give him some bread. And the pasuk says, Vayo'el Moshe lashevet et ha'ish. Moshe Rabbeinu does come over to Yitro's house. Vayiten et Tzipora bito le'Moshe. And before you know it, Yitro gives over his daughter Tzipora to marry Moshe. That's it. It's as simple as that. Comes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is on Daf Kuf Dalet. The Gemara says, in the name of Rabbi Yohanan, Bischar kir'en lo ve'yochal lachem, zachu b'ne banav v'yashvu b'nishkat ha'gazit. Gemara says something amazing. That this which Yitro, Reuel, tells his daughters, hey, Egyptian man saved you by the well, call him over for some bread, which we think that this is a very natural thing to do. Yitro has seven daughters. He wants to marry them off. You finally found somebody half decent at the well, so therefore, you know, bring him over and he's a potential Hatan. The Gemara sees in this something much deeper than that and says that the fact that he called to invite him over and then eventually give Sipora to Moshe, that's a great thing of Yitro. That's a tremendous thing of it. The Gemara does not look at this as a selfish act at all. He looked at this as a greatness of Yitro, to the extent the Gemara says, Biskut, that he did that, his grandchildren would eventually sit in a special office. That office is called Lishkat HaGazit. What is Lishkat HaGazit? That's an office among six offices that were in the on the Temple Mount. That's where the Sanhedrin used to sit. The High Court. It's like the Havdil in Washington. You have the the House of the Department of Justice, or you have the Supreme Court building, very very prominent building, where the nine justices come in their black robes and they decide right from wrong. So the Havdil and Beit HaMikdash, there was an office they called the Lishkat HaGazit. And that's where the Sanhedrin sat. Why did they call it the Lishkat HaGazit is a question on its own. I checked up in the Mishnayot in Masechet Midot, where it mentions it in Perek He, it says Lishkat HaGazit, and I found from the Tosfot Yom Tov, he says V'hayta Asuya Gazit, that actually was made from cut stones and, you know, shaved stones. You're not allowed to use cut stones when it comes to build the Mizbeach. Gazit. You cannot use a knife or a sharp utensil to cut the stones. But for the Lishkat HaGazit, they used these very, very big stones, and they sanded them and they made them nice. And Tosfot Yom Tov says, why did they do that? L'chvodam shel Sanhedrin. You know, they made it a very impressive building. I guess when the stones are shaved the right way and you look at it, it looks very, very, very hashuv, so the people should get an awe or a reverence for the Sanhedrin. Hence, it's Lishkat HaGazit, according to Tosfot Yom Tov, the office of the stones that are, you know, that are cut in a proper way. And I'm scratching my head the whole week because I believe in Midah Keneged Midah, and measure for measure. And I'm trying to understand what's the measure for measure here. I mean, the man offers Moshe Rabbeinu some bread, and because of that, his grandchildren become judges and they sit in the Lishkat HaGazit. Where in the world is the measure for measure? Meaning, the Gemara should have said that in the merit that he gave Moshe Rabbeinu some bread, his grandchildren opened up a franchise at restaurants and they sold, you know, 100,000, big whoppers in a year's time. Well, I mean, that's a midah keneged midah. He gave bread and he got paid back by bread or by food. But is there a connection between inviting Moshe Rabbeinu over for a piece of lechem and then all of a sudden having his grandchildren to sit in the most prestigious office? of the land, the Shkata Hagazit in Yerushalayim. Well, let's see if we'll eventually get back to this. Tonight, I made an exception to the normal order of this shi'ur. The reason why I'm doing it is because I want to show you the gadlut of the great rabbi called Ibn Ezra. Everybody knows Rabbi Abraham Ibn Ezra with his famous commentary on the Torah. But he was also known as a great science mathematician, and you know, he wrote books on mathematics, and he was a great grammarian as well. He was an expert in digduk. And he wrote some of the most famous riddles. And books have been written to explain the riddles of the Ibn Ezra, just to try to decipher them, what he's talking about. Now, since the Ibn Ezra is a Rishon, so, you know, you have to take every word of the Rishonim, and there's a lot of treasures behind them. So, after looking into the books of the Ibn Ezra, I found that he actually wrote a riddle, a chidah, on this episode of the girls coming to the well and getting chased away, and Moshe Rabbeinu coming and redeeming them. I don't have copies for everybody. I made a few of them and I handed it out. You can pass it out after. I'll give you my copy after I'm done with it. The riddle goes like this. I mean, I'm going to read it to you. If somebody could figure it out without having to me to decipher it, the synagogue is going to give them $1 million. So it goes like this. Vayavo'u haro'im vayganeshum mikne avichem ver'ohem lo yahmol alehen gam lehabzot ba'alehen be'enehen sheba'u al hanashim shelo kedarkam lehiyotam b'nei temura af she'enan b'nei av echad שפה אחד ולשון אחד, וזה החילם לעשות להיותם בני נחור. ומעתה אל תטמע על דברי נעמי ורות, יעשה אדוני אמכם ולכם, הלהן תעגנה, שנפחו ממהם ונינם יחד, ותלכנה שתיהם עד בואנה אל הטבעה, זכר ונקבה, כרחל וכלאה, אשר בנו שתיהם את בית ישראל. ואז תבין ותעמוד לגורלך לקץ הימין. חידה זו למראה עיניך עמוקה, והיא קלה, נאה ומתוקה, וטעמה לאיש נאמן כטעם, או כמעט, או כטעם לשד השמן. He went around the world and back. He started over here in this parasha. He goes to Megillat Esther. He ends up in Megillat Rut somehow. He comes along and tells you that the Chidah, although this riddle looks seemingly very deep, he kala na'a umtuka. It's actually a very easy riddle to crack. What was he bothered with, the Ibn Ezra? So I'll tell you how I cracked it. I didn't look at the back of the book to see the answers. I cracked it by looking at his pirush on the Torah on this, to see if he'd give us any hints. So I noticed he makes a very, very important point. The pasuk says that when they got to the well, when Moshe Rabbeinu got to the well, the shepherds came and chased the girls away. So the pasuk says, "Vaygareshum." Now, "Vaygareshum" is written with a mem. That's zachar. That's masculine. What the pasuk should say is "Vaygareshun," with a nun. I mean, listen, I hate grammar more than anybody in the room. So let's just establish that. I was although I did good in digduk and yeshiva, but you know. I'm not saying that was my favorite subject. And I know some people go, oh, nah, he's going to make us crazy with the memes and the nuns. And they do just tell us something on the parasha. But I want to show you that it's worth it to come here for an hour and talk about the difference between the mem and the nun. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu chose that letter in the Torah, one letter is like the whole book. And therefore it's worth our analysis to know why is there a mem over here. It should say by Garishun. So I searched for that. That's a grammatical. Listen, if it wasn't the Torah, you'd say it's a typo. I mean, God forbid, if this was New York Times, you said it's a typo. But it's not. You can't say by Garishun. It's a mistake, but we know these are girls, so it should say by Garishun. That's basic dikduk. So I searched a little for this, and I found actually the Pirush in the back of the book. If this book has it, it's a Pirush of the Rosh. Not all the the Ozbad Darat. So I'll tell it to you outside. He learns that Vaygareshum is referring that they chased away the water. Meaning the girls came and they filled up the troughs with water. And then these bullies came, Vaygareshum, and they chased away the water that was in the trough. They filled it up with the dirt, and they filled it up with... So if you learn like that, Mayim would be Zachar, and therefore Vaygareshum is going back on the water. That's a novel way of learning. We always know Vaygareshum is they got chased away, not they chased away the water. But at least he answers, he has to say that to Rosh, because he's bothered by the mem. So he comes out with a novel way of looking at it. Now, I also found in the Ktav Kabbalah another answer, which works. He says that the reason why it writes it in masculine is because why were they chased away? Why were they getting harassed? And the explanation, he says, is because it really wasn't anything they did. But the townsmen were upset at Yitro. This was a revenge against their father for denouncing his beliefs in Abu Dazara. Now she told us they put him in Nidui. So therefore the Pasuk is trying to tell you, Vaygareshum, that although they were being chased as females, the source of it was the male. It was because of something their father did. You know, it wasn't personal against them, but that's the way the townspeople would be able to take revenge against Yitro by harassing his daughter. So the Vaygareshum is explaining the source of why this animosity existed. That's a good answer as well. I saw the Hemek Davar. he brings another answer as well. He says in Hemek Davar, he writes over here on the words Vaygareshum Bilashon Zachar. He says Shehen Hayu Gevartaniyot. Ladies like to hear that. They were strong like men. I mean, the seven daughters of Yitro, they weren't pushovers. So when these bullies came to the well, they weren't able just to, you know, push them away so quick. The Pasuk says, Vaygareshum, meaning it was like, it was a fight between, men and men. Although they were women, but they had the strength of men. And therefore, the Pasuk is coming to tell us, the level of strength that these women had, and therefore uses a masculine terminology. Okay, so you see, everybody who's explaining these pesukim is giving a shockingly enough, Rashi did not feel to interpret this. I mean, it's such a basic understanding. Unless we might say, and I'm saying this b'derech efshar, Rashi says Vaygareshum, he says two words, Mipenei HaNidui. So could be that that's the pshat of the Ktav HaKabbalah, that he's saying Vaygareshum because of the Nidui. So therefore, since it's because of the Nidui, the Pasuk writes it with a mem to say it's because of the Nidui on the father. Could be that's the omek of the pshat of Rashi, that Vaygareshum mepeneh, because Vaygareshum, that she's not explaining the word Vaygareshum, he's telling us why, but he's not explaining the word Vaygareshum, but according to the way we're learning it, could be that's what Rashi's coming to hint. I said that Bederech Efshar. Anyway, the least appealing of all these answers is the Ibn Ezra's answer. Because he's going to go with Dikduk, and you know, whenever you go with Dikduk, it takes away all the beauty out of it. It just gives you know the formula. You know, there's a rule over here, and that's the way it goes. So, but what makes the Ibn Ezra's answer so beautiful is the way he poetically, writes it. So he's writing like this: Vayavou haro'im vaygareshum. He's bothered with the men, so he says. Mikneh avichem, he says. Well, I found already in Perashat Bereshit that when Yaakov Abinu was talking to his wives Rachel and Leah, and he was talking about the sheep of their father, he says Mikneh avichem with a mem, even though we should say Mikneh avichem. So right away, the Ibn Ezra finds a similarity. Vaygaresh vayavo haroim vaygareshum. Mikneh avichem, gam lehabzot ba'alehen be'enehen. He goes to Megillat Esther, and in Megillat Esther, the concern was that the wives are going to get too much power if we give, you know, if we let Vashti survive this. So what's going to end up happening? All the wives in the kingdom are going to come along and degrade their husbands in front of them. So the pasuk should say lehabzot ba'alehen be'enehem, in front of them, but it doesn't say that, it says be'enehen. So here you see where it should have had a mem, it has a nun. So the Ibn Ezra already is using his computer brain scanning Tanakh. Now look what he says in his only Ibn Ezra can write like this. So what does he see over here? He basically sees that we have a lady, but we're using a masculine text for a lady. So he writes, Sheba'u al hanashim shelo kedarkan, that these letters are being used by, in feminine, shelo kedarkan, in the wrong way. How can you use a mem when you're supposed to use anun? Sheba'u al hanashim shelo kedarkan. So he says, the answer, lihiyotam b'nei temura. The answer is that these two letters are exchangeable in grammar. You're able to exchange a mem for a nun, and a nun for a mem. The b'nei temura. Only problem is, he says, ve'av she'enam b'nei av ehad. Even though they don't come from the same father. And he goes on to explain, Safa ahat velashon ehad. That was written by the Migdal in Bavel. Safa ahat velashon ehad. He says that there's certain letters that come from the Safa. Safa is the... No, there's certain words that come from the lips. You can't say them without using your lips. For example, a bet, a vav, a mem. A mem is considered originating from the Safa. There's certain letters that come from the Lashon, from the tongue. For example, a nun. You know, a nun, the tongue has to hit the palate. So therefore, they come from two different origins. Normally, the Ibn Ezra says you can exchange letters that come from the same origin. But here, a mem comes from the lips. And the nun comes from the Lashon. So he writes, Av she'enam b'nei avehad. It's not from the same father. Safa ahat v'lashon ehad. This comes from the Safa, and this comes from the Lashon. But he says, V'zeh achilam la'asot. But if you look at where they have in common, Lihiyotam b'nei nahor. They're both b'nei nahor. Now what does he mean? I'll tell you what he means. I'm not too sure I understand why it's so. What he's saying is that if you look at what these two letters have in common, They both need the nechirayim. To say a mem and a nun, it's got to come from the nose somehow. If you hold your nose and try to say a mem, well, I just said it, it worked for me, but it seems that you can't say it correctly unless you say it, you know, from, it's a nasal word. It's got to, maybe we're not saying it correctly, we're not pronouncing it correctly. It's got to, some air's got to come out of the nechiraim. So he says, we found the commonality between them. They're both b'nei nahor. He says, Umeata, once I told you this rule that they're interchangeable, al titma al divrei Naomi verut. Don't get shocked at Naomi and Ruth. Why? Ya'as Adonai Imachem. When Naomi was telling Ruth and Orpah to go home, she said, Ya'as Hashem Imachem. What a mem. It should have been a nun. And Vilachem. Yiten Adonai Lachem. Umtzena Minuha. It should have said Lachem. Well, don't have that question anymore. Because I just told you that these two letters are B'nei Temura. Halahen te'agena. Halahen. It should have been halahem. Shenefpechu mimehem veninam yahad. Nefpechu mimehem. That's referring to the waters that changed from water to blood. But now he's making a play on the words mimehem, the letter mem. Nefpechu mimehem veninam yahad. Ninam is the nunim. That you see that the mems and the nuns, they can go either way. And therefore he says, "Vatelachna shetehem ad bo'ana Bet Lachem." When Ruth and Naomi were traveling to Bet Lachem, it says, "Vatelachna shetehem." That mem should be really a nun. Zachar unkema kerachel uchlea asher banu shetehem et Bet Israel. Like we say in the Gilad Ruth again, that you should be like Rachel and Leah asher banu shetehem. Shetehem is masculine, but the Ibn Ezra says, once you know the rule of the mem and the nun, shetehem and sheten is the same. Ve'az tavin v'ta'amod le'goralcha le'ketz hayamin. Really, it should say in Daniel ketz hayamim, but the nun and the, so that's his rule. At the end of the poem, he says, chidazu le'mare anecha amuka. This riddle, at first glance, looks very deep. Ve'i kalana umtuka. Now he gives you the answer to the riddle in the last line. If you read the end of the riddle, you know exactly what he was going at. Why? V'ta'ama le'ish ne'eman, somebody that's loyal, who will taste this riddle, ketam le'shad ha'shamen. It tastes like what the Torah says, le'shad ha'shamen. The cake that was made like an oil, with oil. Now that mashal of Keta'am neshad ha-shamen was said by what? By the man. So he says, that's the secret here. The mem and the nun. He says, this riddle over here, if you know the secret of neshad ha-shamen, of the man, the mem and the nun, you'll know the secret of exactly what I was getting at over here. So I give credit to the Ibn Ezra. Or he doesn't need my credit. But my point is, the credit belongs to him that he took a very dull grammatical rule and he made it into an incredible. Every one of these lines is either a hazal or a pasuk somewhere, and he's able to weave pasukim throughout Tanakh and tell a story, and basically give us a very dull grammatical rule to at least explain the mem in Vaigareshum. So once I saw that, I said, you know what? Let me go start to see now the rest. What I came across, listen, everybody's bothered by the Vaigarshum. But then the Pasuk says, Vayakum Moshe Vayoshian. Okay, back to Yoshian, so it went back to that. And he saved the girls. Vayashk et Sonam. Wow. Sonam. I mean, again, I hate to turn this to a grammatical class, but I don't see so much discrepancies in one pasuk jumping back and forth from a nun and a mem and a sonam. It should say bayashket sonan. So the Ibn Ezra deals with this also, and again, a dry grammatical rule. He says, it's too difficult to say two nuns in a row. Sonan, That's hard on the tongue. So to make it easy for the Baal Koreh, so they changed it to a mem. That's his language. He says, and I quote, Sonam b'mem shelo lehaber shnei nunim. You don't want to put two nuns together. It becomes too difficult. Machnon. So what's the explanation? Vayashket sonam. So I searched in the Sefarim, and I found a very, very interesting interpretation from the Hemek Davar again. The Hemek Davar says, well, I'd like to explain it. He says on the Pasuk, Vayashket sonam gam ken belashon zachar shehishka gam etson haro'im. He says that not only did he give the girls water to drink, but Vayashket sonam, he also gave the bullies, he gave their tzon also, so therefore it mentions it in Zachar to say that he gave them to drink as well, which is, by the way, an amazing midav Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, you think for a second, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah doesn't tell us too much stories about him before he meets God at the burning bush. It only tells us three episodes. So we have to assume that these three episodes are the main introduction about Moshe Rabbeinu's life that you have to know, which leads him to the burning bush. The three episodes have a common denominator, that Moshe Rabbeinu cannot tolerate an injustice. And it doesn't matter where the injustice is coming from. On day one, the injustice is coming from an Egyptian. On day two, the injustice is coming from a Jew. On day three, the injustice is coming from total strange that doesn't even know. When Moshe Rabbeinu sees somebody that's oppressed, or somebody that's being abused, or somebody that's being maltreated, or taken advantage of, Moshe Rabbeinu's sense of justice to protect the one that's being wronged is so strong to the extent, I mean, listen, this got him in trouble. The fact that he got involved on the second day with the two Jews that were fighting, it caused him to be a fugitive. That means he has to leave Egypt without a house, without a roof over his head. I mean, there's no hotels from Mitzrayim to Midian, so that means he's living as a nomad. He was forced to run for his life because he got involved in arbitrating and in refereeing fights, in settling scores. You'd think that once he gets to Midian, the last thing he's going to do in Midian is get involved in other people's business. And he's not there for 5 minutes. The ink on his passport is still wet, and he sees already an injustice at the well. And he says, hey, this is wrong over here. These girls were here first. That shows you how l'shem shamayim Moshe Rabbeinu was, and how the truth to Moshe Rabbeinu is overriding everything else, even at expense of his life, even expense of his career, even expense of his comfort. I mean, there's nothing more important to Moshe Rabbeinu than the right thing. This is a higher level of understanding Moshe Emet. Moshe's honesty does not allow him to see something that in his mind is sheker. And if he is present, Moshe Rabbeinu does not have the ability to close his eyes, to walk away. And it doesn't matter if he just got mosered on because of this, and he just became a fugitive as a result of it, it doesn't matter. Moshe Rabbeinu is the ultimate judge, that when he sees something wrong, which means he has no bias. You know, a good judge he makes a ruling no matter where the cards fall. A bad judge says, well, if I say this, I'm going to lose my status, I'm going to lose my my salary, they're going to pressure me, they're going to, like we have in government today, that judges become political positions. There's Democratic judges and there's Republican judges, and they get based on the, you know, on their philosophy, and if they don't agree with the senators that confirm them, so they're going to have problems. They're going to protest, they're going to write about them in the newspaper. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu is he doesn't care. The only thing that stands in front of him is the honesty. But I just want to show you how honest he is. That after he rules that these guys are bullies, and he says, you got to go second, these girls were here first. After the ruling is over, he then goes and takes water for those guys' sheep. That means it's nothing personal here. A judge is a human being. After a judge makes a ruling against somebody, so you hate that person, you're against that person. Moshe Rabbeinu's rule was strictly just. And therefore he can make a ruling that the Ro'im are out of line, and he chases them away, and then all of a sudden he tells them, okay, come back now, what do you want from me? Let me give you some water for your sheep. Well, you just chase us away. What is one thing out of the other? That was wrong, now this is right. You deserve water. I didn't say you don't deserve water. Your sheep deserve to drink. That means Moshe Rabbeinu was able to separate. There was nothing personal in his judgments. It's such a perfect ish emet. So the pasuk is coming to tell you that even though vaygareshum vayashket sonam, one is not a contradiction to the other. To the perfect objective judge, it's not a stidat to be vaygareshum and then to vayashket sonam. That's, I think, the depth of the Himig Damar is saying. Comes a great rabbi called the Oznayim LaTorah. I want to make his point because it's a very, very important point. He says, you know, when we were young, they told us, cheaters never prosper. If you cheat, at the end of the day, you're not going to get anywhere. And it always pays to be honest and it pays to do the right thing. And here you see, you know, an exception to the rule. Moshe Rabbeinu is nobody more honest than him. He's the prince of Egypt. He doesn't have to get around refereeing, you know, fights and all that. He can sit in the palace on a satin bed and, you know, get servants to feed him and all that. Instead, he's getting his hands dirty. He says, oh, Egyptian guy, you're hitting somebody. Hey, that's wrong. Next day, hey, two Jews are fighting. So you think that Moshe Rabbeinu was such an honest man. He cannot, you know, bear to see an injustice. And what's his reward? He becomes homeless. He gets kicked out of Egypt. I mean, his picture's in the post office, wanted dead or alive. Paro has the mechabarat looking for him. And he becomes a fugitive. Says those Oznayim LaTorah, is that the reward? I mean, where's the midah? Can they get midah? I mean, God's supposed to, you know, reward people that are justice. So he comes along and he says, finish the story. He writes, he holds it's a pele of Saratskin. Sheotam midat tova lehatzil ashuk miyad oshko, to save the oppressed from the oppressor. Ulhoshia lechol anvearis, and to save the underdogs. Katsalat ivri miyad makehu amitsri, vaivri miyad ivri. It caused Moshe lehavi alav shoah. Shoah is like a tragedy. What's the tragedy? Uba al yedeze lide hisron bayit vekora al rosho. We would call that in the vernacular homeless. He became evicted from Egypt. He says, Hamida hazot ba'atzma. But it pays to be straight, because this midah of seeking justice, hezero lo bayit miklat, it ended up bringing him to refuge. How? Ki al yedeshet arev beriv haroim, when he got involved in the fight with the shepherds at the well, benot yitro betzilan miyad oshkehen, and he saved them from the oppressors, nitkabel bebetoshel yitro. Who brought him to the house? Yitro, and then Yitro ends up giving him a wife, and now Moshe can build his own bayit. So look at the midah keneged midah. Moshe Rabbeinu, who because of being straight, was willing to give up his house and give up his roof. And what ends up happening? That midah itself brings him to the bayit of Yitro, and brings him to Sipura, which in effect is the building of Moshe's own bayit. So you see, it's true. It pays to be honest. It pays to be straight. Well, you thought that Moshe Rabbeinu Chazal was getting the short end of the stick for being so straight. On the contrary, it brings him to a perfect end. That's the Oznaim that Torah says. The Sefer Sora Mor writes that the Torah tells us only three episodes, because you don't have to tell me more than three. Three serves as a hazakah. So once you know already he did this behavior three times, you can establish that that is the midah of Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu is honest. He will not allow wrong, as long as it's in front of his eyes, to go unchallenged. And if it's his inability to settle it, to make it right, he's going to do it in the fairest way. I want to point out that even when he killed the Egyptian, which he believed that was the halakha, not before he scans his history to see if any tzaddik is going to come from this Egyptian. Ve'ifin kovako, that she learns that he looked into his future to see if anybody good's going to come out. And if he would have seen somebody good come out, Moshe Rabbeinu would have said, okay, you walk. So you see how fair Moshe Rabbeinu is. It's not over here a hot-headed judge who is personal because she hit a Jew, and everything is done with tremendous objectivity and calculation. I'm trying to explain to you, what does it mean, Moshe Emet? The Emet of Moshe is seen in these episodes very clear. In the second episode you see it clearly, because who are those two guys fighting? Datan v'Aviram. Now Datan v'Aviram eventually would be Moser on Moshe. And you see in the Midbar, when they come after him in Korach's case, Moshe Rabbeinu sends them a peace offering. Peace offering, Moshe, these are the guys in Mitzrayim that squealed on you. This is a different case now. I'm not going to hold them. You think judges are human beings? What does the judge say? Well, I'll get him on the next time around. Don't worry. He escaped this time to court. We'll get him on the next time around. He comes to the court of the judge. Oh, I remember this guy's ugly face. Now they get him on a ticket. They put him in prison for 100 years. Moshe Rabbeinu now has a chance for the Tabba Avinam to bury them under the ground. Which eventually, but they did it to themselves. What does he do? The Torah says he sends them a message. Please don't join Korach. It's a mistake. That means Moshe Rabbeinu is so honest in his judgment and so fair. So it says, they come home. The girls come home. V'tavona il re'u'el avihin. Why does it call them Re'u'el? Why is it called Re'u'el? So the Al-Sheikh over here has an incredible interpretation. The Al-Sheikh is bothered also because if you look, when the girls tell Re'u'el, "Batomarna ish mitzri hitzilanu," we say we were saved by an Egyptian national. So he says, "Ve'ayo, where is he? Lama ze azavtem et ha'ish?" So he says, they called them an ish mitzri. And he says, why did you leave the ish? Why doesn't he say, where's the mitzri? Why does he call him the ish? And Al-Sheikh has an unbelievable malach over here. He says what happened was the following. And I'm paraphrasing, of course. He says there was some tension in the house of Yitro between him and his daughters. I mean, you could understand it. I mean, seven daughters. Before that, they lived on with great status. They had kavod. They actually lived in Egypt. Yitro was one of the advisors of Paro. And because he was very outspoken, the Midrash tells us in this week's Parashah, there was a meeting. There was only three advisors present besides the king. Yitro was present, Bilam was present, and Iyov was present. The king said, "Hava nitchakemalo. We need to do something with the Jewish problem." Bilam right away jumped in and said, "You're right. We have a Jewish problem. The only thing we could do is kill them." And he voted to take the Jewish boys and kill them. That was Bilam's vote, knowing that Paro wanted to do that. Paro looked at Iyov. Iyov pleaded the Fifth Amendment. He said, "I have no comment." Yitro, who was in that meeting, he protested. He said, "That's the wrong thing to do. Why should we kill innocent people? The Jewish people are not a threat. They never harmed anything. We don't have any information as such." And as a result, he angered Paro. And as a result of that honest, true opinion, he had to run away from Egypt. You see something very interesting over here. You see how families connect to each other that have similar stories. You know, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to meet Yitro, they have the same story. They both had to leave Mitzrayim because they were both honest, because they were both giving the right opinions. Yitro was not two-faced. Yitro could have said to Paro, "Yeah, you know, whatever the king wants, I'll do it to save his skin." As a result of Yitro being honest and being just and standing for what's right, he lost his career as an advisor, and now he becomes a nomad and he has to run to Midian. Says the Al-Sheikh, you know what he was telling his daughters all the time? "Those rotten, lousy Egyptians. I was there, Paro's uncouth. They're like Nazis. They want to kill Jews for no reason. They're uncivilized. And the daughters heard these stories from Yitro. He's telling them stories in Egypt, how bad the Egyptians are. And now all of a sudden, he decides to become a monotheist. Now, forget it. The daughters have no chance. They lost their status in Egypt. Now they lost their status in Midian. So he says, the Pasuk is calling him Re'u'el. Re'u'el means friend of God. Because the daughters were telling him that, because she became a friend of God, we lost all our friends. I mean, you have a friend of God, but we have no friends anymore. We became outcasts. So the Pasuk says, "Vatavona el Re'u'el avihim." They came to the Re'u'el to say, this business over here, Re'u'el, it's affecting us. So he says, "Vayomer madua mihartem bo hayom." If it's affecting you, how come you came home early today? If it's affecting you, you should have came home late. How bad is it affecting you? You came home early. Vatomarna. So they come back and answer their father, "Dad, you're not going to believe it. Ish mitzri etzilanu." How bad could the Egyptians be? You're telling us how bad these guys are. This guy was the Egyptian guy at the well. Shibi Jenin, the guy came. He saved us from them. He gave us to drink. He even gave them to drink. That's what the Pasuk says. Gam dalot dala. Double. Dalot to us, dala to them. Bayashkit ason. The guys, how bad can these Egyptians be? Vayomer el benotav. After he hears what this man did, he says one thing. Ve'ayo. Where is he? Says the Mekubbalim, you know what he was hinting? This guy's no Egyptian. The Egyptians don't have this derech eres, they don't have this honesty. The Egyptians would have taken you and taken the Ru'im and thrown them all into the well, and take the whole well for himself. This is nothing to do with Egyptians. Ayyora shetevot Abraham, Yitzhak, v'Yaakov. That this man over here must be from the descendants of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Lamma ze azavtem et ha'ish. This man is not Ish Mitzri. This man is Ish, period. He must be from a different tribe. He must be Jewish. No goy in Mitzrayim has this sense of honesty, and has the, that means he's rebuking his daughters. What his daughters are coming to say, Daddy, Ish Misri, Ish Misri, Ish Misri, they wouldn't do such a thing. They drown you and they would drown the Ra'im, and then they'd eat you, they'd cannibalize you all. And here the Pasuk says, Lama azavtem et ha'ish, this man must be an Ish. K'en lo v'yochal lahem. Call him over. Let him come and eat some bread. What was Yitro impressed? Says the Al-Sheikh, Yitro was impressed by the honesty of this man. Here's a stranger, guy comes to a foreign place, doesn't know any of us, and all of a sudden sees something that's wrong over here, and right away he gets involved. This man has such a sense of emet, it's strung accord with Yitro, because Yitro has a similar midah. After all, it's Yitro that was in the palace of Paro and told Paro, you're wrong, and he stuck up for justice. So when he hears, he thought he's the only one in the world like this, and all of a sudden they said, there's another guy in the world like this over here, bring him over, this man over here resonates with me. The pasuk says, Vayoel Moshe Lashevet et ha'ish. Yitro says, you're calling me Ish? He says, guess what? It takes one to know one. You're just as much of an Ish as I am. When they shared stories, they said, you're telling me that I'm a man of justice and honesty? You're the one, you rebelled against the king. You stood up for a whole nation because you felt genocide is the wrong thing, and you spoke about it. Although your opinion might not have changed Paro's opinion, but at least you spoke against it. You were honest enough to give your opinion. I'm an Ish. I spoke against a couple of Ra'im over here. I spoke a couple of shepherds. Who's the Ish? Takes one to know one. Oh, at this point, what does Yitro say? You belong in my family. You become my son-in-law. Comes the Gemara and says, Bizkut that Yitro invited Moshe for a loaf of bread. What's the pshat? He was impressed by the decisiveness of Moshe Rabbeinu's honesty. He was impressed by Moshe Rabbeinu's understanding of right and wrong. He was impressed that Moshe Rabbeinu, his objectivity, that when he saw something that was wrong, he punished the Ra'im and then he gives them water after. He saw such an honest man. That's what impressed him, not a piece of loaf of bread. Loaf of bread was the Saudah that they had. And then he realized that this man over here is Ra'ui to marry his daughter. The Gemara says, you know what the reward for Yitro is for that? His grandchildren would come and sit and be the biggest judges in Klal Yisrael in the Lishkat HaGazit. Because a man that gets impressed by justice, a man gets impressed by honesty, a man that will give his daughter to somebody that behaved in such a way, that already shows you how honest a man must be himself. And that's a midah keneged midah. So the Gemara says, in that zechut, his children would sit in the Lishkat HaGazit. Rabbi Bahya says, why is it called Gazit? Gazit means to cut. He says, the job of a judge is to cut the judgment. And the judge cannot be afraid where the knife, where the gavel lands. He cannot be afraid of the rich man, he cannot be afraid of the poor man, he cannot be afraid of repercussion, he cannot be afraid of retribution, he cannot be afraid of anything. To sit in the Lishkat HaGazit, the judge has to have what the Rabbeinu Bahya calls givura. That's why the Rabbeinu Bahya says in Torah language a judge is called Elohim, because Elohim is givura, is midat hadin. The judge needs to have inner strength to make a rule and let the cards fall. And where do you see this? You see this in Yitro. Yitro made a ruling in the court of Paro. He took nothing into consideration. Not that Paro's against it. Not that Bil'am, who's instigator, is against it. Not that this is going to cost him his job. Not that this is going to cause him to have to run away from Mitzrayim, probably for his life. Is there any greater gazit than Yitro? And therefore the Torah says, in the merit of Yitro's loyalty to justice, that he lived it and he appreciated it in others. So his children go sit in the Shkata Gazit, and it should be noted. It should be noted that not only that, but Yitro gets the zechut to being the one that offers Moshe Rabbeinu the idea to set up the system of courts. The whole entire court system in Klal Yisrael comes from Yitro himself. And the Gemara says, really his name was Yeter, and they added the Vav Yitro, because Yeter Parasha Ahad Torah, the Parasha of Dayanim, an extra Parasha was added in the Zechut of Yitro. You know what a Zechut that is? And it should be noted also, I'm just thinking of this now, I don't have it all worked out, but it should be noted that in that Parasha of Yitro, where Yitro gives the advice of Dayanim, how does the Parasha end? I hope I'm right, I'm going according to memory now. Well, you guys know everything. At the end of the parasha talks about the Mizbeah. Ve'im Mizbach Abanim Ta'aseli Lo Tivne Etem Gazit. The only time it says Gazit in the Torah is in Parashat Yitro. Here it's coming to say, yes, Lo Tivne Etem Gazit. The Mizbeah is not Gazit. But the Lishkat HaGazit, the place where the Sanhedrin is going to sit, that Bedavka is made out of Gazit. Not only like Tosfot Yom Tov said, Lechbod the Sanhedrin, which is an impressive building that the Sanhedrin is sitting, because Gazit also means it's decisive, it cuts. And therefore, the Sanhedrin deserves to have that name. It's the office of decisiveness. The office where you have men that don't care about any other factor except the emet, except the truth. And therefore, it's a match made in heaven. And for Moshe to find such a father like Yitro that have the same values, the same sense of honesty and justice and seeking equality for all people. Moshe doesn't matter to him. You know, on the first day you could have said, well, it's personal, because the guy's beating up a Jew, that's why he killed him. You know, he wants to protect his own. On the second day, it's two Jews. Okay, well, it's also Jews. On the third day, what are you going to say? It's not Egyptians and it's not Jews. It's a bunch of randoms. And still he went out of his way in order to protect the underdog, the one that was getting abused. And that's a great lesson to us. Maimonides writes in the Moreh Nevuchim, I wouldn't have guessed it, but he writes it in Chelek Sheni, in Perek Mem He. He's talking about the prerequisites to become a prophet. Anybody interested in becoming a prophet? He tells you the different ingredients that are necessary. We've been giving classes over the past couple of weeks on the road to become a prophet, different things that you need. I'm sorry to tell you, none of our members have become prophets as a result of those classes. But maybe because we're missing this, he writes over here, Techilat Madrigat Nivu'ah, the beginning of prophecy, Ish Ezer Eloki Shiagiehu Vizarzeu Lemaase Tov Gadol Kehatsalat Kahal Hashuv Mikahal Re'im. Maimonides says prophecy begins not with all sorts of Kabbalistic dipping in the mikveh and fasting, doing something for the Sibur to save them from injustice. And he gives the example, Veda shekemo ze hakoach lo nevdal me Moshe Rabbeinu me'et esigo legeder anashim, when he became an adult, velezet orer laharog et ha-mitzri velemnoa harasha meshne ha-natsim umahazik ze hakoach bo ad she'ahare pahdo, after he was chased away, ubarcho, he had to chase away from Egypt, v'gi'ol le-midyan v'hu ger yareh. He says he was a stranger in the land. He must have been afraid. Kasher ra'a me'uma min ha'avel lo mashal me'atzmo Nahasiro velo yachol lesovlo. He wasn't able to tolerate it. That's the midah, and that midah of lo yachol lesbol, he could not tolerate a wrong in front of his eyes. That's a prerequisite to prophecy. You thought that a prophet is somebody that, you know, goes to a mountain in Tibet and he crosses his legs and he hums and he just gets involved in meditation. You cannot be a prophet. You did nothing for society. You know, you just you contorted yourself into a pretzel and you took off your shoes and you did nothing for the people. The prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare begins when he sees something wrong, he does something about it. That's a lesson to us. We're not going to have prophets in our generation, the Gemara said, for different reasons. Prophecy cannot be attained. Even Ruach HaKodesh, unfortunately, cannot be attained. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't strive for these prerequisites that lead to these great madrigot. It might not lead us to prophecy, but it'll lead us to high levels. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. But in Moshe Rabbeinu's case, it's not even Yisrael. The sense of honesty of these great tzaddikim that we talked about tonight caused them to react in ways and in situations that are above and beyond our comprehension. It teaches us at least to be to a certain degree matayagiu ma'asai lema'asai avotai, that we have to emulate them. We have to follow their sense of honesty and justice, and when the right is right and wrong is wrong, and what's emet is emet, and not to be in a generation where false flattery becomes the name of the game. You know, who can false flatter the Rasha because he has some money and he has some influence and he has some power, so therefore we're scared to say anything because, you know, we might not get paid and we might not get the proper respect and we might get fired. These were not any hashbonot. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he did these things, he didn't know what's going to lead him to become a prophet and become the Gadol Ador. At the time that he did it, he was doing it because it was the right thing. And Yitro the same. Elika God brought both these two tzaddikim under the same house, and they end up marrying into that family. And because of that, God says to Yitro, you appreciated the sense of justice of Moshe. You're going to have justices that will come out of you, that will sit in that lishka of decisiveness of lishkat gazit. Baruch Adonai leolam. Amen. Amen.